For the transcript, this will be the GNSO working session GTLD.
Right, good afternoon, everyone. I would like to welcome you to this next session. This is the GTLD update from Christine Willett of ICANN staff. Christine is playing a pivotal role in supervising elements of the execution of the new GTLD program, and I'm sure she's perfectly capable of introducing herself to you. So without further ado, I'll welcome Christine to the GNSO Council meeting and hand over to her for a presentation followed by a Q&A. Thanks, Christine.
Thank you, Jonathan. Can I be heard? I think I can be heard. Thank you so much for having me here today. I appreciate the time. I'm going to give you an update on the new GTLD program, a status update. I apologize in advance to those of you who listened to the webinar. We had about 200 people on our webinar 2 weeks ago. So if some of this content is repetitive, I apologize. However, there is new content as well. So we've got some new information we'll be covering today. I want to start by talking about what's gone on since the last face-to-face meeting in Toronto, which I actually wasn't at. So, my team and I have been working diligently to deliver on the commitments that were made in the Toronto meeting for the next phases of the program. So we're going to talk about timeline, the application processing, and the initial evaluation work that's been ongoing. We'll also briefly touch on objections and the dispute resolution process. Although I am not leading the effort on negotiating the registry, registrar agreements, talk about that from a process standpoint. And also a brief update on pre-delegation testing and the pilot that just completed. Then I'd like to speak to operational readiness for the new GTLD program. I heard some questions for Fadi to that effect. And then I'll be speaking specifically of both what I'm calling our rights protection mechanisms as well as our operational support mechanisms. So that's my agenda for this session. Since the Toronto meeting in October, a lot's happened. We reopened the TAS system, gave applicants access to their application data, so we were also able to begin issuing clarifying questions or CQs. That started in a small way in November and more in earnest in January. We held that little prioritization draw in December, which was a focus for the team for quite a number of weeks. We issued CQs on a regular basis, everything from posting pics to publishing initial evaluation results. So it's been a busy 6 months. Actually, this week, I've now been with ICANN 6 months. So it was a milestone for me. Here's the timeline. This is the timeline, program timeline, that's currently on the new GTLD website. I'm making more of an effort and working with the communications team to get a readable, visible, understandable timeline published and out there, and as things change, as they do with regularity, we're working to update this timeline. In terms of application processing, which has really been the focus of my team for some number of months, we've been in the midst of initial evaluation. The other aspect in the last month that many of you have been aware of is the objection process that's occurred, and then a slight look ahead to what we'll be doing for the transition to delegation. The program started with 1,930 applications. To date, and if you go to the website, you can see that 39 of those applications have been withdrawn, leaving us with 1,891 active applications. We all have also announced that one application, one string, failed the string similarity panel, and two of the applications failed the applicant support panel, which ostensibly those two efforts will both take those strings out of the application process. So we've been releasing application initial evaluation results on a weekly basis. As of this past Friday, my team has issued results through the first 108 prioritized applications. 93 total IE results, all passing at this time. I want to mention why. Clearly there are 15 results that have not been published. That's for a variety of reasons. One, because those applications may have pending change requests. Two, because in a few cases we had a few panels issue late clarifying questions. Not that the applicants are late in responding to their questions, but we had late clarifying questions released. Or because as part of our administrative synthesis of results, we have gone back to the applicants in an outreach mode, and we are asking applicants to submit missing information that the panels did not consider or was not available for the panels to consider during their initial evaluation. So it's for those reasons that these 15 applications haven't received their IE results yet. The initial evaluation reports identify which applications are passing, whether applications are recommended for extended evaluation. The reports are quite comprehensive. We're including quite a lot of detailed information about the results and the scoring. With the exception, we are not publishing any confidential information for the applicants. So even if it is an application that is not passing initial evaluation, anything confidential for questions 30 through 50 are not going to be reflected on that report. The IE reports are available, and the applicants are notified through the TAS system, and then within minutes, the public reports are posted on the website, on the microsite listed there. As of this Friday, these are the statistics. I've been reporting these statistics on a monthly basis in the webinar. You'll see significant progress. We have many more applications pending CQ response and post-CQ evaluation. So we're seeing regular and continuous progress as these applications move through the cycle. Objections and disputes. I reported in the last webinar that 274 objections were submitted. To date, the dispute resolution service providers have validated 220 of those objections. There are still clearly objections that are with the DRSPs and going through that initial evaluation validation phase. The guidebook called for a 7-day, a 1-week administrative review period. The DRSPs asked for an extension to that. We granted them an additional 7 days for their review. So we are now at 220 objections. which have been validated, 33 for string confusion, 69 for legal rights objections, 23 for limited public interest objections, and 95 for community objections. The objections that comply with the AGB will be posted on their websites, which I believe all of these 220 now are on the DRSP websites. ICANN will be issuing an announcement once all of the notifications are sent to applicants. We're anticipating that for this coming Friday, April 12th. Once the applicants receive the notification, the formal notification from the DRSPs, the 30-day window for response to the objection will begin. So the applicants then have 30 days to respond to the objection and to submit their fees. If the applicant either doesn't file their fees or does not respond, then the objector will prevail by default. So there's the objection and dispute resolution page on the microsite is being updated frequently. As we get more information, anytime that there is, we find that we're getting questions, we're trying to update the microsite to provide the best information possible, so that's available to everyone. As some of you are aware, I'm sure, the independent objector filed 24 objections. 11 of those were for limited public interest. 13 of those were for the grounds on the community objection listed there. Talking about the registry agreement and public interest commitments, ICANN published the revised registry agreement on February 5th and solicited applicants to submit their public interest commitments, or as we're now calling it, the PIC spec, by March 5th. We received a total of 506 PIC specs and posted those to the microsite. There is a download, PDF download, that you can run to download all of those at once, except that it does generate about 100 megabyte file, so it's difficult. But you can get them all at once if you so wish. I don't know if Fadi or others discussed the agreement. I'm not part of the ongoing agreement negotiations, but I know that the team is working diligently with the negotiators, both from the registry and the registrar sides, and that those are ongoing. And what I heard this week is that much progress has been made. There was an updated registry agreement posted on the 2nd of April, and that I believe the team is working with and is out for public review and discussion during these meetings this week. We're anticipating that an agreement will be accepted and reached on the registry agreement, and that either during this meeting here or shortly thereafter, the ICANN board will formalize and accept that revised registry agreement so that we can move on to the contracting phase of the program. So applicants that are eligible for contracting, meaning that they have passed initial evaluation, they don't have any objections, and they are not subject to GAC advice, nor are they in string contention. So if the application doesn't fall into any of those categories, then they will be able to proceed to the contracting phase. We've actually done quite a bit of work internally to document a process around contracting, that there's an exchange of documents that's going to be necessary, and I've listed just a few of the documents that we anticipate needing to exchange. We're looking at it very much as an escrow process, that there's going to be an exchange of materials. So not just the continued operating instrument or letter of credit in many cases. We'll be exchanging contact information, obtaining cross-ownership declaration, and looking for the applicant to indicate whether they're going to accept the standard or base agreement, as it's being called. I think it's probably understood that by accepting the standard registry agreement, applicants will be able to proceed more quickly through the contracting process and move to pre-delegation, and that negotiation beyond the standard registry agreement will take them to a different process to work with the ICANN legal team to negotiate that agreement. Beyond contracting, pre-delegation testing. We have concluded our pre-delegation testing pilot. We actually accepted 12 pilot participants. We had 140 applications volunteered to participate in the pre-delegation testing pilot, and 80 individual applicants representing 12 registry service providers. We determined to make the best use of the testing time frame. We selected one pilot participant application from each of those registry service providers, and those are listed here. The pilot completed this Friday, past Friday, April 5th. After selecting those 12, actually only 9 of the applicants were able to participate, but that was significant, and we got a lot of good feedback, and that we're going to take back to our partner. .se is the provider doing the pre-delegation testing with us, and we're working with them to revise the testing procedures, to make the testing procedures better and the tools better, and to make the process as streamlined as possible. So the lessons learned are going to be captured, and we're looking to a continuous improvement effort here to make this pre-delegation testing, which we anticipate doing for the next couple of years, as smooth and seamless as possible for everyone. In terms of documents and materials that have been published about pre-delegation testing, the test specifications for the pilot were published on the 20th of March, along with instructions and templates for data input on March 15th. We're anticipating that the pre-delegation test user guide will be published on April 17th. So again, those lessons learned will be incorporated and that document will be published. There is a pre-delegation testing session on Wednesday afternoon, I believe, that I would encourage folks to attend. It's very much going to be a workshop-type session. Our vendor.se is going to be there. We'll be talking through a number of detailed technical issues around the pre-delegation testing. So I'd encourage applicants to participate in that session. Now moving on to the new GTLD operational readiness. This slide Fadi presented in the webinar 2 weeks ago, and we've adopted it internally very much as a way to show there are layers to the new GTLD operational readiness, certainly starting with the stability and security layer, but there's also many steps we're following. We're many bricks in that we're building upon as we move towards new GTLD operational readiness. The applications, I gave you status, those have been posted and published. The prioritization draw is complete. Initial evaluation is ongoing, and we're releasing results on a weekly basis. We anticipate the registry agreement being finalized shortly, so we can move to contracting. And once that's done, we'll be able to move to the pre-delegation testing phase with our first applicants. As we prepare for delegation and the IANA team gets ready for delegation, they have enhanced their root zone management system. And that system has completed UAT, user acceptance testing, and is anticipated to be complete and ready by May 1st. We're looking at an operational date and to use the system to delegate new GTLDs as early as June 1st. Trademark Clearinghouse, the verification system, the online trademark verification system went live on the 26th of March. We anticipate the Sunrise functionality of the Trademark Clearinghouse to be operational by July, so we could see the first sunrise in July with the first claims period to start a month later. URS. The first provider contract was signed in February, I believe, and we are on track for the URS to be operational in July. Again, while we will, the first TLD could be in a sunrise period. And then we get to what we're now calling operational support mechanisms, the eBro and RSLA monitoring tools. We've announced the three eBro providers, and we're anticipating that at least the first provider for the eBro service will be operational by August and in place by the time the first new GTLD is operational. We're also looking at layering in SLA monitoring tools, which we don't have today, and also anticipate those being operational by August.
Christine, this is a pretty critical slide, and I know the council was concerned about issues of operational mm-hmm. readiness and wanted to talk with Fadi about that, mm-hmm. and probably you as well qualified as anyone to talk. So I just thought we may pause a moment and see if there are any specific questions in and around this slide, or if people would prefer to hold off to the end. Mm-hmm. Does anyone have a question they'd like to raise on at this point while we just take a moment? Yes.
Yes, Annie Kminskalis with IPC. My question relates to final submission guidelines in connection with the TMCH, because submission guidelines, there were some published a couple of weeks ago, and I think they did not reflect. I'm looking for the current submission guidelines that includes the abused names, the 50 guidelines.
So that is regarding the abused names that were part of the enhancements to the TMCH. Let me follow up and get back to you on a date for that. I think that we're still discussing the implementation of the enhancements to the TMCH.
Christina.
I just have a quick question as to when you anticipate we're going to be hearing about what the final URS filing fee is going to be.
The final URS filing fee.
The mechanism was recommended with kind of an ideal filing fee mm-hmm. of $300 to $500, and it's my understanding that whatever that fee is going to be hasn't been released yet, and I wasn't sure as to when that will happen.
So I think that is understood. There will be, I have a slide on URS, and I've got some more content on that, so let me address that on that slide.
Steve Del Bianco. Steve. Thank you, Christine. For some applicants, registries, their agreement will include requesting the exemption from the code of conduct. And if they do, have you just started to design the process by which you would ascertain their eligibility for that exemption, as well as any subjective means of figuring out the third condition, which relates to the public interest?
So the process around eligibility for that would be invoked during the contracting phase, and my team will not be, although we will be administering that process, we're not be doing the negotiation, so that's something that our legal group will administer and working with our registry services team. In terms of the ability to invoke that, I think that there are a few considerations that the board is still looking at. And I think we anticipate GAC advice may bring some clarity to eligibility for such exemptions. So we'll be following whatever guidance we get from the board and from the GAC on that eligibility.
Marika?
Yeah, this is Marika. I have a question on behalf of a remote participant from Jasmine Omer from ARI Registry Services. The question is, does the July date for the TMCH refer to the date the TMCH will be available for testing?
So the TMCH will be available for testing either in late June or early July at this time frame, and for integration testing. However, we are also... I'm preempting my slides. So we are also anticipating having our first sunrise, a test sunrise, if you will, with the .jobs TLD that's already been delegated. That was announced this past week. So there will be a first sunrise in the June timeframe, is what we're anticipating now. So certainly there would be time for integration testing in that late June, early July timeframe.
Chuck.
Chuck Gomes from VeriSign. Hi, Christine. Nice to meet you in person. Welcome to the ICANN world. something's not clicking with me. If the Trademark Clearinghouse is not going to be available for integration testing by registries and registrars until July, how can the first sunrise period be offered in July? What am I missing there?
So there will, the first sunrise, which you may be aware of with the .jobs, is right now we're tentatively looking at a June timeframe. So there would certainly be time for integration testing prior to that. We are allowing for, when we are building into the timeline, time for each registry service provider to integrate to the Trademark Clearinghouse before, and actually we're looking to get that done for each registry service provider before their first sunrise is scheduled.
So, Chuck Gomes again. So, if I'm understanding correctly, the July target for the first sunrise is not new GTLD sunrise necessarily, but it would be the .jobs sunrise.
We're still anticipating that we could have a sunrise in July.
So, even if the ability for testing doesn't happen until July, you're expecting a very short testing period? Is that what you're saying?
Well, we anticipate that the integration specifications will come out well in advance.
Okay.
And we certainly anticipate that we will need a few weeks, two or more weeks, to allow the registry service providers to perform that testing. And that is being built into the IBM timeline for the project.
Jeff.
Yeah, just, hi, Christine.
Hi, Jeff.
To follow up on that point, you just said that you would allow integration testing before the first sunrise. I mean, we need a little better than that, right? We don't know in our, as a registry services provider for a number of applications, mm-hmm. There's a few of us, we need to do integration testing and build our systems immediately. We're not going to know necessarily when our first client's sunrise is definitely going to begin, but that doesn't mean we don't need to test in June or July. And one thing I would caution, because there seems to be a very, when you have pilot programs, ICANN takes, and I hate using this term, but it's a very ICANN-centric view of testing in pilots. What I mean to say is that when you have a pilot program, it's only a pilot program for you, for ICANN, and for your vendors. It's never a pilot program for us. So Neustar participated in the pilot, the clarifying questions. Mm-hmm. We submitted answers to ICANN, never got any feedback on any of those answers. None. None of the applicants that did. On the pilot for the pre-delegation testing, never got any feedback from the tester. The only feedback is... it's amazing because, again, it's kind of ICANN-centric. It's a survey comes out. You want feedback from us on how your systems are, but you never give feedback to us on how we did or what things we may or may not be doing right in your system to make sure that we can pass the testing for our clients. And when asked when I asked the question several times, both during the pilot for the clarifying questions and for the pilot for the pre-delegation, I asked the same question and got the same answer. Can the people that participated actually get feedback so that we can prepare us and others for this? The answer is no, you can't. It wouldn't be fair to everybody else, which I think is, again, a very ICANN-centric view. What I'm glad to hear you say is that every registry opera services provider that applied got to participate. So there should be no reason at all why we shouldn't be getting a call like everybody else in the next week or so from the testers to say what we did wrong, what we did right, what we're going to have to do the next time to prepare our customers. So I want the same when we do – sorry, last yeah. point, just to follow up. Mm-hmm. When we do that for the testing for the TMCH, mm-hmm. I don't want a pilot. Mm-hmm. I want actual true testing with feedback in both directions, and I want that promise today.
So
I need it for my developers.
So let me respond. So the CQ pilot, I was not here for. I think that the clarifying questions pilot was unique, and I think it would be challenging in that situation because we were trying to keep a level playing field to have given applicants who participated in the clarifying questions pilot feedback on the merit of their responses. I think really would have presented some disparities and lack of equity across applicants. So I think for the clarifying questions pilot, I can certainly appreciate your perspective and the desire, but I understand why, from the program team, giving feedback on the clarifying question responses wasn't practical. From the pre-delegation pilot, I know that my team asked me, can we share feedback with the pre-delegation testing participants? And I said yes. So I actually expect that you may not be getting the final formal report, but I think it's very reasonable, your expectation of getting feedback from the pre-delegation testing pilot for the nine RSPs that and applicants that did participate. Getting feedback from the pre-delegation testing pilot is very reasonable.
So just to respond, I have an email from your support team that says no. And then I also, when we tried to talk to the provider SE, mm-hmm. they said, we can't talk to you, talk to ICANN, and then ICANN said no.
I know.
So it's this... I'm happy.
I'm glad you brought it to my attention. I will address that with the team. It's a very reasonable request. Very reasonable. In terms of pilot testing, I did not mean to say that the .job Sunrise will be a pilot. It will be a first. It will be a pilot in that it will be the first Sunrise using the Trademark Clearinghouse. But it will be a real Sunrise. It won't be a test. The RSP for .jobs will need to actually test, do an integration test, and integrate to the Trademark Clearinghouse before that Sunrise process period can occur. And as a general principle, the sequence of events is such that we expect the RSP at least once to integrate and test with the Trademark Clearinghouse. Once that integration test is completed and successful, then the first Sunrise will be able to be scheduled. But we won't be scheduling the Sunrise until the RSP has been tested with the Trademark Clearinghouse.
Thanks, Christine. I think this is helpful. I hope you don't mind that the carrying of this Q&A is very, and I suspected this whole issue of GTLD operational readiness is very high on people's minds. Mm-hmm. So I've got Ching, Yoav, Mason, and myself. Mm-hmm. Ching, please.
Thanks, Jonathan, and hi, Christina. Nice. Yeah. Just like everyone else, thanks for making the time here. Actually, one quick question and one comment. Quick question is that for the TMCH operational issue, should we direct that question to the ICANN team or simply to the team in Deloitte, or I mean, AKA Chip. I mean the reason that I'm asking is that people inside this room, they know that whom to talk to, but outside this room, I mean, just believe it or not, there are many brand owners who are still confused about throwing in trademark info into a domain name called www.trademark-clearinghouse.com. They do not have that kind of confidence to see it as part of ICANN. They see it as a separate entity. So, but anyway, the question is, should they direct the operational questions to here at ICANN, or?
So I would say if there are specific questions or issues about the verification system and submission of marks to the Trademark Clearinghouse, definitely Deloitte has an email address, and they may have set up a toll-free number to accept questions, and they are getting a lot of questions around submission of marks. So the first tier would be to go to Deloitte. If you're not getting resolution in a timely manner, now I'm going to say this, and I'm going to ask, you know, for some reasonable timeliness, not 24 hours. But if you're not getting response in a reasonable amount of time, then I would definitely say that the new GTLD team will accept those questions and do our best to look into them and research and respond.
Thanks, Ching. I've got Yoav Mason and myself.
Yeah, hi, Christina. Thank you also. So my question is, what is exactly the timeline between now and April 23rd? So Fadi just said that we're not rushing anything and the agreements will be done when they're done. But as I understand, there's a board meeting scheduled for April 20 to approve the RAA and the RA. So what is going, how does it fit? And then what is going to happen in April 23rd?
So that event is really Fadi and Sally's event that they're leading on April 23rd. You're right. I'm also aware of the April 20 board meeting, and hopefully the registry and registrar agreement will be resolved, and we'll be able to say that we have a firm registry agreements and RAA in place that we can begin to execute. You know, there are a number of steps, as I mentioned. Contract execution isn't simply signing the agreement. There's a number of documents that need to be exchanged. Could that be accomplished by April 23rd? Maybe. But there is a process, and there are several steps to go through. Again, it's dependent on GAC advice. It's dependent on objections. And so could we be signing agreements on April 23rd? Possibly. But we'll be following the standard process for contracting and exchanging the documents, finalizing letters of credit, getting all of the documents we need signed in place before we execute the agreements.
Mason.
Thank you. Christine, I had a question on your slide here about contracting. So it looks like there's plenty of in the pipeline between now and when new TLDs will start flowing into the marketplace. It looks like there could be a pinch in that pipeline around the issue of contracting, because if a large number of applicants decide that they want to negotiate, then as you, I think, correctly point out, it'll take additional time. Is there other capacity being built on staff to handle the contracting phase if that becomes necessary?
Yes, there is additional bandwidth being built. I don't know if anybody from the legal team is here, but the legal team is supplementing and augmenting their staff to address the anticipated demand for that. Not only are they augmenting their staff internally, but they also have plans for outsourced additional resources. Yep.
Christine, I've got myself in the queue now. I've got two questions, one relating to, I guess, wearing my hat as a registries counsellor and thinking about the registries issue. I mean, some of it has been touched on before, but it's certainly, I would encourage you on behalf of the registries to be as clear as possible about the sequencing of the execution in and around the rollout of the Trademark Clearinghouse. And this relates to when and if you'll have a specification for the interface, when and if you'll have a test environment, when and if you know that you expect the live environment to go live, and so on. That typical kind of software. And there's a couple of issues. I think there's a presumption which some others touched on, that the speed with which integration and software development can take place in some medium, some larger organizations, some with many other priorities. I mean, it's very important that is provided in that correct sequence. And an analogous point was, or a related point was, I thought I heard you say that in having this sort of pilot with .jobs, you were going to essentially permit integration by one registry service provider ahead of others. And that strikes me as somewhat surprising that you wouldn't release a specification and test environment that was more universally available to the registry service providers across the board, notwithstanding whether or not you ultimately go live with a TLD from one, you know, underpinned by one registry service provider. So I do have a second question, but that's all in and around the sort of test and launch of the TMCH interface. Let me say the other point, because it's directly connected, and the other point is in and around the Trademark Clearinghouse. And I think I understand why ICANN chose to make the split between the technical function of IBM and the validation verification provision that Deloitte does. And just for the fullness of disclosure, I think most people know that I've been assisting Deloitte with some elements of their work. But nevertheless, I don't think it's widely known and understood in the industry, you know, in the broader community, how that split exists and who to go to with questions of integration or testing. Or, you know, I think that there is now, as a consequence of that, no sort of single interface, which is why people say, well, should we come to ICANN? And I think that's a sort of a marketing or a customer service challenge that ICANN needs to grapple with and somehow resolve. So those are my two points that essentially questions as well. Thanks, Christine.
Thank you, Jonathan. I spent much of my career building systems, large-scale systems, and doing integration, so I certainly appreciate that systems integration is non-trivial and that it requires time, planning, implementation work. So the point that registries with many competing pressures and multiple projects will need time to support this. Karen Lentz is going to be leading a session on Thursday on Trademark Clearinghouse that both Deloitte and IBM will be present for. So we'll be able to go much more in depth at that session. But in terms of making a test environment and testing accessible to one registry service provider and not others, the intention, you know, the intention is sort of a double-edged sword. If we try to keep a level playing field and we make things even for everyone, there's, you know, some parties that would like a different method and they'd, you know, seek preference. If we give preference, even from just a sheer timing perspective, that could also be criticized. The intention is not to ultimately give preference to anyone, but it's to keep pace with the anticipated, with the existing delegations. So the registry service providers who will be supporting delegated TLDs, that is the intended sequence that the RSPs will be given testing preference to the TMCH. So that is the sequence behind it. Now, I'm sure we can go into this much in much more detail on Thursday. But I don't believe that all 30-plus registry service providers could be supported in testing at the same time by IBM. from a support, in order to support that testing and give feedback, there's going to be a limitation. So, again, that is why we're going to focus on testing with the registry service providers in the sequence of which those TLDs are delegated.
Okay, thanks. I think I understand your rationale. I'm not sure that it's... Jeff, if you want to respond, but I do have Christina waiting as well. If you respond,
yeah, just to respond to that, about 12 years ago, I think I asked the same question when we were launching .biz. I didn't want to have all the registrars come into my system and test at the same time, and I was told, no, I had to allow all the registrars in. So I think we're going to tell you the same thing. Let all of the registries in. IBM's a big company. They can do it. It's a testing environment. It would not be fair to allow one registry to do the testing, get your feedback from that one registry service provider and not the others, especially if tweaks are going to be made, because none of us can – it would not be fair to only allow us in after you've fully tested and gone live with another registry, because the answer your guys will come back to us and say is we can't modify our systems because we already have it in place and it's already live. So – I urge you, 30 companies is nothing compared to the hundreds we had to put into operational testing, and every registry going forward, if they're going to have hundreds of registrars do it, they're going to have to allow operational testing for all the registrars at the same time. I totally understand your rationale, but if we have to live with it, I think you guys can live with 30, and I'll tell IBM that as well.
Thanks, Jeff. Sounds like we may pick this up again on Thursday, but Christina.
Thanks very much. I just want to reinforce what Jonathan was saying in terms of clarifying and communicating the distinction operationally between IBM and Deloitte, because quite candidly, I was on the IRT, and I'm not even clear as to who does what or how to do it. So if that's true for the folks who really have been living and breathing this, I think that's very true for folks who are just learning about it. And not to be alarmist, but I guess one thing I'd like to talk to you a little bit about, not necessarily here, but, you know, obviously for this sunrise test for .jobs to be valid, there has to be kind of a realistically significant number of sunrise registrations. And without, I don't think that's an accurate assumption. I'm not sure that there's a real demand in the trademark community for .jobs sunrise registrations right now, given that everybody's saving their registration budget for new GTLDs. So I guess the point I would just think about is how, at what point are you going to have to kind of put dummy records into the clearinghouse to make sure that you have something that can work for purposes of having a valid test? It hopefully it won't happen, but I think it's just something that you need to be prepared to do in the event that there simply isn't enough demand for .jobs sunrise registrations for the test to have any validity.
So I understand the point you're making in terms of volume. I don't have a current count on the registered marks in the Trademark Clearinghouse as of this moment. I expect by June we will have quite a few marks registered in the Trademark Clearinghouse by the June timeframe for the .jobs sunrise. But what you said and what Jonathan said in terms of providing the community more clarity on what is Deloitte doing, what is IBM doing, what is the role, so that the concerns also about the trademarkclearinghouse.com system is understood. So we can definitely work on communications around that, and we'll certainly cover that in the Thursday session.
Okay, Jeff, and I think we should let Christine move on through the rest of her presentation. I've helped to hijack it at this point, although I do think these are important and substantial questions. Thanks, Jeff.
So on the clearinghouse, since a number of us are trying to get our systems ready, and is there any kind of reporting that the clearinghouse is going to do on a regular basis as far as I don't want to know what marks are in there. I'm not asking for any, but numbers would be helpful. you know, there are X number of marks in the clearinghouse, things like that, that would help us as registry service providers and registrars, frankly, to just try to prepare for the type of volumes that we're looking at. So is there any kind of reports or reporting function that you all are contemplating for that?
I know that operationally Deloitte has committed to providing operational status reports to ICANN. With that in mind, the number of marks, usage, statistics, I can certainly look into getting that information and providing something as part of the monthly update. So I will take that request.
All right, let's let you move on, Christine, in the interest of getting through the material you've got for us. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So I think we've covered Trademark Clearinghouse. I want to distinguish, I think there's been previously a little lack of clarity between what I'm calling now rights protection mechanisms and operational support mechanisms. So rights protection, and I'm sure there could be debate on this, but I'm considering Trademark Clearinghouse, the URS, and our post-delegation dispute resolution mechanisms as being rights protection mechanisms. So we've covered Trademark Clearinghouse. Service is launched. Yesterday, we published a draft of the rights protection mechanism requirements document that's posted out on the new GTLD microsite on the Trademark Clearinghouse page. I understand we've already gotten some feedback on that. The agreements, the Deloitte agreement, as well as two agreements for IBM, we anticipate publishing any day now, frankly. I don't have a date on that, but I expect it could be within the next week, possibly two. Just a matter of priorities. The legal team's been a little busy with the RAA and registry agreement negotiations. I've already spoken to the July date for Sunrise capability being operational and August for the claims capability being operational. URS. The National Arbitration Forum was announced as the first URS provider. This month, we anticipate that we will be publishing the supplementary rules from NAF this month, and we hope to be able to announce one or more supplementary additional providers for the URS service this month. And then over the course of the coming months, April, May, June, more information will be forthcoming about the exact details of the integration between the URS and the registry service providers, the interface, the validation, the announcement page expectations. And for the July, by July, we anticipate that the URS systems will be operational, and the first URS provider, NAF, will be doing a demonstration at our meeting in Durban in July. We anticipate that there will need to be a step added for each new GTLD to verify each registry's operational readiness for URS. Again, where this test fits in the overall timeline, we have not yet ascertained that, but we'll just need to verify that every new GTLD is prepared to support the URS service. Post-delegation dispute resolution processes. There are three of them. The guidebook called out the registry restrictions and trademark post-delegation mechanisms, and with the PIC specifications, we've now added the public interest commitments post-delegation dispute process. The PIC DRP spec has been published last month, and staff anticipates that we'll be issuing RFPs in the next coming months for to select providers for the PDDRPs. I don't have a specific date here, but our expectation is that the post-delegation dispute mechanisms will be in place by the time the first new GTLD is operational. Now, what I'm calling operational support mechanisms. data escrow, SLA monitoring, the centralized zone data access, and eBorrow. So the data escrow specification has already been published. So I'm going to move on to SLA monitoring. ICANN is engaged with a partner, Zabbix, to develop and implement the registry monitoring platform. The tool, we will have monitoring nodes across all ICANN regions, and we anticipate that the SLA monitoring tool, the release one, will be available in August, which will support full DNS testing, as well as WHOIS and EPP tested using standard TCP ports. Release two will be coming in the October timeframe, which will be the full EPP testing, the full WHOIS testing, as well as the full correlation testing. I don't know more details on this. I will admit that right now. So I would encourage us, I don't believe we have a session specifically on SLA monitoring this week, but if you have specific questions about that, let me know and I can get someone to follow up with you about this.
Jeff, do you have a, it wouldn't surprise me if you did have a question on
no,
this.
No, I would just say if we can actually have that vendor on, and maybe even a registry call where the registry and the end tag, so that we can get some more comfort level, because frankly, none of us have that comfort level at this point that ICANN or a vendor has the ability to do that kind of monitoring that is in the guidebook right now. So I think setting up or just saying from the outright, let's get them on the phone and at our next call to go through it.
Actually, Jeff, that's a really good point, and I'll jump in there because, as you know, and I'm wearing my sort of registry hat again here, I mean, we had Deloitte present to the registry stakeholder group, and that was very effective. But really, who we need to talk to is IBM. So that's another vendor we'd love to hear from in the registry stakeholder group. I'm sure the registrars may well have the same view, but certainly representing registries as a counselor, that's something which we'd like to do.
So I think that's perfectly reasonable. We'll get that planned. I'm viewing the SLA monitoring tool and these operational support mechanisms as enhancing ICANN's ability to support registries. These are tools we don't have today, and we have 23 operating TLDs. So I think that these are enhancements that the guidebook has called out. So this is not on that critical path to delegation or even new GTLD operations. So since we do have operational TLDs, I think that still with this August timeline, we anticipate having an SLA monitoring tool there. But it's not a dependency for delegating.
Actually, Christine, that highlights a very good point, and maybe that's something others would be interested in seeing then. If it is possible to segment the timeline to go live into items on the critical path and items not, that may well be, because it's clear you committed to some items, but you don't see them as a necessary condition to going live. And so I think that might be very helpful for as a slide or some form of communication. You're probably going to tell me you've already done it.
Well, it's minimally depicted on the BRICS slide for new GTLD operational readiness. There's a line between URS and eBorrow. So we're looking at TMCH, URS. Those are on the critical path to the first new GTLD being operational, whereas eBorrow and SLA monitoring, CZDAP, et cetera, those would be operational enhancements, which would not be on the critical path.
Got a question from Lars.
Yes, it's a question from the remote participation. It's actually on the earlier subject of the trademark clearinghouse. Just very briefly, Christine, could you please confirm that the TMCH will be able to accept IDN-related TMs? And the question was from Liz Williams.
Yes. So I think that all was also brought up with Fadi. But yes, the Trademark Clearinghouse supports a variety of marks, including in non-LAT scripts.
Uh, Okay, so I mean the live issue there is not so much, as I've understood it from our discussions to date, is not so much the issue of handling IDNs but handling variants. But let's not reopen that now. We are aware that that's a stake that's been placed in the sand, and but let's not reopen that discussion now.
So sorry,
there's one more question. One more question, and then we will let you keep going.
Yes, Ann Aikman Scalise with Lewis and Rocha, also with IPC, but I'm not asking this question in relation to IPC. It's a comment in my individual capacity about the public interest commitments dispute resolution procedure. And I gather that at some point it was determined that that dispute resolution procedure was a matter of implementation and not a matter of policy. And I'm wondering how it came about, and I'm somewhat concerned that it's really a process whereby the expert panel makes a recommendation to the ICANN board, which the ICANN board can then either follow or not follow. And it strikes me that with 506 public interest commitments having been already made, and the possibility of future public interest commitments being made as discussions continue with the GAC, I'm curious about how it was determined how this dispute resolution procedure should be adopted in this kind of time frame with these substantive provisions.
So I think it's clear to everyone that I'm clearly on the implementation side of the House. That determination, the concept of the PIC DRP was brought forward with the February 5th publication of the revised registry agreement and the PIC specification, and a PIC DRP was called for then. The PIC DRP was then published, and I believe we're seeking feedback on the procedure. So I don't know that there was a formal process there, but I'm happy to take that back and discuss that with the team.
Thanks. I think we're done with the questions, and let's let you move on to a conclusion.
I just have a couple more slides. So we talked about SLA monitoring, and we'll be looking for more information on that and a call with the vendor to provide you with more information. In terms of the centralized data access, it's to address requests from zone data consumers, law enforcement, et cetera. It's in support. We're developing a tool in support of the model that was put forth by the community of registry operators and security experts. We're looking at a new model for zone file access that will be able to scale with a larger number of GTLDs that will be available. And the intention is that we're looking to provide a tool that will provide a single centralized point of access, and that it will provide the user with data in a standardized format, even if the registry is keeping it in different formats. So we're looking at a June launch date on the centralized zone data access program there. eBorrow, we announced last week that three eBorrow providers have been selected, and work is ongoing with those providers. We anticipate having at least the first provider active and in place by August. We are in the process of finalizing agreements, so we will be contracting with them. There will be a process workshop to go over just the specifics of the eBorrow implementation, and we'll be finalizing the details around that process implementation in, I believe it's late April now. And then there will be extensive testing and simulation before any one eBorrow provider is considered live. That provider, each provider, will go through a simulated back-end process. So each provider will go through that. We anticipate staggering the agreements so that there is continuous support for these eBro providers, and we'll be addressing that through the contracting process as well. Finally, I just, in addition to this session, thank you for letting me speak with you. I will be having a new GTLD program status session tomorrow afternoon. There will also be, following my session, Jeff Moss will be leading a panel discussion on new GTLD stability, security, stability, and resiliency. There will be a meeting as well, a session on Monday afternoon on the registry agreement and the 2013 RAA. On Wednesday, we've got two sessions upcoming if you're interested in much more detail about the IDN variants and on pre-delegation testing. And the pre-delegation testing session, as I mentioned, will have our .SE vendor there to answer questions and take questions. And then the Thursday session on the Trademark Clearinghouse. So I'd encourage all interested parties to attend those sessions.
Thank you very much, Christine. Thanks for taking the time to address the council and talk us through the issues. I know Chuck is waiting to ask something, and that's all I have at the moment. Wendy.
I beat Wendy, huh? Chuck Gomes from VeriSign. On the centralized zone file access target of June, does that allow for registry interface testing in that? Because obviously the registries will be providing the data. It does.
Okay. Yes, yes. Thank you, Chuck. Yes, it does. So you're absolutely right. I mean, I'm hearing you loud and clear that we need to make sure that all of our timelines and all of our plans allow for adequate testing by the registries to support these tools, and we're rolling out a lot of them. So most definitely.
Thank you very much, Christine. Wendy, apologies. There's your...
Thanks. Glad to get in just under the wire. With a question on the PIC DRP and whether there are any cost estimates for that dispute resolution.
I don't have cost estimates on that at the moment. In fact, I have to admit I'm not even versed on any previous cost estimates for the other two post-delegation dispute mechanisms. So that's something I don't have the information on, but let me do some research. Clearly there's some discussion that needs to go on about the PIC DRP. We haven't even finalized RFPs for these services. So we will be publishing RFPs to seek providers on these services. Thank you.
Sounds like we're all set. Thank you very much, Christine. Good to meet you. Good to see you here. And thank you for updating the council. Just a note for councillors, we have one more final session this afternoon. I know it's been a long day. And that is our update from the IETF. So thanks again, Christine. And I think let's take just a minute before Olaf comes and sets up. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.